Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
We start the breaking news this morning. Denver's got a new quarterback. Adam Schefter tweeted, and I quote, "Breaking. Baltimore has agreement in principle to trade former Super Bowl MVP Joe Flacco to the Broncos, league sources told ESPN. Trade cannot be processed until new NFL league year begins Wednesday, March 13th. Teams prohibited from commenting on deal or terms surrounding it." End of tweet. So it does make sense. In fact, it makes complete sense. It's a deal that had been rumored for quite some time, and while official compensation has not yet been announced, the expectation is it'll be for a mid-round pick. So the Broncos need a new quarterback. The Ravens do not need Joe Flacco. Baltimore is going all in on Lamar Jackson, and Denver is going all in on Joe Flacco. Maybe. Sort of. I guess. Kind of hard to tell. Because they've appeared to go all in on all kinds of quarterbacks over the past several years, only to move on quickly. But more on that in a second. Here's what I do know. Gary Kubiak, who is still involved with the Broncos, was with Flacco in Baltimore. When Kubiak was in Baltimore and everybody wondered whether or not Joe Flacco was elite, nobody banged that drum harder for Flacco than Kubiak and Joe Flacco himself. And while there are expected to be a bunch of teams looking for a quarterback and a bunch of quarterbacks on the move, the Broncos apparently found the guy they wanted and wanted to get out in front of teams like Jacksonville and Miami. And apparently, for some reason, they wanted Flacco more than somebody like Nick Foles. And the deal does represent a perfect marriage of two great drops. You've got Joe Flacco's, "Hey!
Hey!"
And then you've got John Elway's, "Thank you to John Elway."
Thank you to John Elway.
Hey!
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 Thank you to John Elway.
And now John Elway can thank John Elway for bringing in Joe Flacco. And that better work out. Flacco better work out. Because the position that Elway dominated has been the one position that he seemingly cannot figure out. And it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, does it? How does one of the greatest quarterbacks ever have so much trouble picking and assessing the talent and potential of quarterbacks? I mean, what is that? Remember when Elway dumped Tim Tebow and he did it so smoothly and so successfully and he looked like a freaking genius for doing it, for having the stones to do the right thing when literally nobody wanted it and the Tebow nation was peaking and this guy took all the heat. Elway took all the heat, but he did the right thing and it was the right thing. Dumping Tebow was the right thing, especially since he did it to bring in Peyton Manning, and then he won a Super Bowl ring with Manning. Again, the guy looked like a genius. But then, Manning quickly gassed out. And then so did Elway in trying to find his successor. The list of Broncos starting quarterbacks has been long and undistinguished since. It's been one swing and a miss after that since. Brock Osweiler. Trevor Siemian. Paxton Lynch. Brock Osweiler again. Case Keenum. And now Joe Flacco. It's a hell of a lot of quarterbacks and a lot of bad quarterbacking in not that much time at all. I mean, there have been first-round busts like Lynch, late-round picks who were hyped as brilliant picks and then turn out to be anything but like Siemian, and off-season acquisitions like Keenum, who was supposed to solve everything last year and apparently didn't because they're already making another move at quarterback. So, is Flacco the guy? Is Flacco an upgrade? Pretty tough to say, right? In fact, really, really hard to say. In fact, impossible to say because his numbers and Keenum's numbers really aren't that far apart. In fact, they're practically identical over the past few years. I mean, Flacco is taller. I guess that's something. Kind of. Not really. And yes, I know Kubiak did work with him in Baltimore, but that was 5 years ago. And Flacco clearly is not the same guy now that he was 5 years ago. His numbers have been in a nosedive ever since then. So bottom line, if you're a Bronco fan, you better hope that the guy who was benched in Baltimore is better in Denver, because if not, Elway might be the next quarterback who has shown the door.
John Elway.
Hey!
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 Thank you to John Elway.
Hi! Hey!
Hey!
Hey, hey John, is there anybody you want to thank?
John Elway.
Hey, John Elway, is there anybody you'd like to thank?
Hey, John.
Thank you to John Elway.
Time to meet Mr. Rome.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, John.
Time to meet Mr. Elway.
Hey, if he breaks it, if he busts us for some reason, tackle him.
Hey. Hi, hey.
Hey.
Anyway, that's not done yet. That's not done yet because the league new year is not official yet, but apparently it will be according to Adam Schefter. All right, Bronco fans, are you excited about that? Is that the guy you want? It's
hey.
Not Nick Foles, is it? 1-800-636-8686. Hey, John Elway better get this one right.
Giddy up, horse face.
Everything he touched turned to gold, man. That him running Tebow for Peyton Manning and then turning that into a ring was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. But he hasn't done anything since in the way of selecting a quarterback. And Joe Flacco, if that's the guy to turn the tide and the fortunes of the Broncos, you know, I don't know. Hey!
Hey!
You can follow him at Ross Tucker NFL. Got some things to talk to him about. Ross, great to have you back. How are you, Ross?
Jim, I am fantastic. Good to talk with you, and even better to see you in Atlanta.
That was fun, Ross. It was really good to see you. Great to get caught up, and it's good to have you back. Let me start with the Broncos and Ravens. Ross, they reportedly have a deal in place to send Joe Flacco to Denver, what is for to be expected a mid-round pick. Bottom line, is Flacco the answer to Denver's problems?
Wow, that's a good question. I think he's better than Case Keenum. And I'm higher on Flacco at this stage of his career than a lot of people are, Jim. I don't know that I could say he's the answer to their problems. I think a lot of that has to do with expectations, right? I mean, John Elway is a Super Bowl or bust guy. And I think, you know, he's seen what Flacco has done in Denver in the playoffs. He's seen Flacco outplay Tom Brady multiple times in the playoffs. His new head coach, Vic Fangio, was in Baltimore for a couple of years as Flacco, so knows him, and then was the defensive coordinator for the Niners in the Super Bowl when Flacco and the Ravens beat him. So I wonder how much of this has to do with 2012 when Flacco went into Denver and won on the Raheem Moore play and then beat the Niners and Vic Fangio in the Super Bowl. I think he's better than Keenum. I think he's got more left than other people do. I don't know if he's the answer to their issues. I still think that they probably draft a quarterback and maybe high. You think about last year, a lot of the teams did that. You know, the Arizona Cardinals went out and got a guy like Sam Bradford, but drafted Rosen anyway. The Browns got Tyrod Taylor, but drafted Baker Mayfield anyway. I think that's what Flacco is. Flacco is the guy for this year and maybe next. But I still think Elway probably takes a guy pretty high in the draft.
We're talking to Ross Tucker. All right, so where does that leave John Elway? I mean, he looked like a genius when he was able to move on from Tim Tebow. He brings in Peyton Manning. But every quarterback move Ross has made since then has been a bust. How badly does Elway need this one to work?
Pretty badly. Now, he's built up a lot of equity there, as we know, for number one, what he did on the field there, which will never be forgotten, winning two Super Bowls, going to five. But then even since he's been the GM, I mean, they won one, they got to another. And I'll give him a lot of credit for one thing, Jim. Their draft last year was awesome. I mean, you go right down the line, and even Philip Lindsay, the guy they didn't even draft, but Bradley Chubb was terrific. I mean, almost every guy, Deshaun Hamilton had a really nice year for them. He had one of the best drafts, Cortland Sutton, Royce Freeman, I've seen in a while. So I think that really helps them. It is funny, though, in the NFL, you can do a lot of things right, but if you don't get the quarterback position right, it really doesn't matter that much. I mean, you know, you're really still not going to be able to get near where you want to be.
Ross, it is funny, right? You can do a lot of things right, but if you can't get the quarterback position right, it almost doesn't matter. Even funnier when one of the best to ever do it can't get the quarterback position right. I'm trying to get my head wrapped around that. Why is that? Hump Day in today's Daily Jungle is sponsored by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. And there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level at all. This simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 most popular. And with Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. And if you're listening to this podcast, Robinhood is giving you a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. You just have to sign up at jimrome.robinhood.com. That's jimrome.robinhood.com. Why is he having so much trouble finding quarterbacks when he was one of the best to ever do it?
It's a terrific question. I think the answer is twofold. Number one, I think the position's changed a little bit since when he played. And number two, I don't know that he's doing a great job or has done a great job of valuing the things that really matter. I think he's looked at a lot of big guys. He took Osweiler in the second round, took Paxton Lynch in the first round. Maybe you could say the same about Flacco. I mean, all those guys are 6'6 or taller. He clearly values size. Keenum kind of went away from that. And he values the big arm. And I think those things are great, Jim, but you know, the one thing we're noticing with every passing year in the NFL, it's that size and the big arm don't seem nearly as important as they used to. I don't know if Elway just hasn't figured that out, or he's stubborn, or he's looked for a bunch of quick fixes. You know, he was able to get Peyton Manning, and then every year it seems like he tried a new guy. I'll give him credit for this. He never just says, well, maybe the guy will get better the next year. He gets a new guy every year at this point.
Now, he's pretty ruthless like that. I agree with you. I think it's both those things, Ross. I think that's what he thinks works. That's what worked for him. And I think that he's not changing. He's not adjusting to it. And then that brings us to Kyler Murray, which I'll get to in 1 minute. What about Nick Foles, though? Ross Tucker, my guest. What about Nick Foles? If you were Nick Foles, where would you most like to play next season? And what does this trade mean to him?
Well, I actually think it helps Foles, whether that's free agency and his market, or if the Eagles tag him and try to trade him with the franchise tag. And I'll tell you why. I really felt like, you know, yesterday that there were 4 teams I felt like were definitely in the market for a quarterback, whether that was a veteran or a first-round pick. And I thought it was going to be the Dolphins, the Jaguars, the Redskins, and the Giants. And I actually thought Flacco might end up going to the Redskins or one of those 4 teams. So now that Flacco's gone to a different team, I think it just helps out Foles' free agent and trade market, because that's one other big name that teams would be able to sell to their fans that's no longer available. Yes, Case Keenum's probably available now. I just don't think any team out there really thinks that they can sell Case Keenum to their fans. Let's say you're the Redskins, right, or the Jaguars. You can sell Joe Flacco and winning a Super Bowl and all those starts. You can't say Case Keenum's going to be our guy. I mean, you can't say that. So Foles is a sellable commodity, and I think he's clearly the best guy that's out there now. Maybe you could have debated Foles and Flacco. But I got to tell you, Jim, I still think he's going to Jacksonville. I mean, everything I've heard, all of the signs point to Jacksonville. Redskins might draft a guy. Giants probably draft a guy. Same with the Dolphins. I think the Jags are the one team in which the entire hierarchy of the front office, that entire regime and head coach, is on the hot seat. And they have a team that's good enough to win right now, as we saw last year in 2017 when they went to the AFC Championship game. I'd be shocked at this point if Foles doesn't end up a Jaguar one way or the other.
I agree, Ross. I would be all in if I were the Jags. I would do whatever I could. I would be all in to bring him in for all the reasons you just mentioned. Now, as we get closer to the draft and we're talking quarterbacks, there's going to be so much talk about Kyler Murray. As a former offensive lineman, Ross, what do you make of him as a quarterback?
I like him, and I think he's got a lot of similarities to Russell Wilson. You know, I'm not the first person to say that, obviously, but to me, they're the most similar. You know, when people bring up Baker Mayfield or Drew Brees, I don't really see that. I think, you know, he's got a really good arm like Russell Wilson. But what makes him unique at this point is his feet, and not just running, but using his feet to buy time and make plays. I've never seen another guy in the NFL do it like Russell Wilson. I think Kyler can be that next guy. Now, he's clearly smaller than Russell Wilson, not as thick, but I do think he's a little bit quicker and a little bit faster, as hard as that is to believe. I think he's got a very bright future. I think the game has changed, and I know people are concerned about his size. But, I mean, you ever see the Oklahoma offensive line? I mean, those guys are gigantic. Although that would be actually the counter argument, Jim. They had the best offensive line in college football.
Right.
I mean, they literally won the Joe Moore Award as having the best O-line in the entire country. So I wonder how much teams take that into stock and how that will affect. And how does he do if he's taking more hits? Because he's not behind the best offensive line in college football in the worst defensive conference.
Yeah, I think, Ross, for instance, I saw Russell Wilson in the week of Super Bowl. We talked about this yesterday on the program. Daniel Jeremiah came on. I sat with him in a trailer. I mean, he's thick, right? Now, that's not to say that Kyler Murray can't bulk up and he's young and he'll get bigger, he'll get stronger. But Russell Wilson, he's thick. He could take that pounding. So we'll see whether or not Kyler Murray can. Before you go, Ross, you wrote a piece about Rob Gronkowski. And you were talking about whether or not that might have been his final game. You wrote this piece for The Athletic where you didn't tell him to retire, but you did write about your own experiences with your back surgery and back pain. Bottom line, what did you think as you watched him over the course of the season, and what would be your message to him?
Well, I thought he looked better in the playoffs and certainly in the Super Bowl, but I was on the sideline in Buffalo when he came off the field, and I could just tell that his back was not right. As a guy that's had a back surgery in Buffalo, I could tell that his back was not right. And, you know, my point would just be this, Jim, and this isn't just to Gronk, but this is any NFL player, and especially NFL guy with back issues. He's had three of them. He's had three back surgeries. You know, you don't think about it when you're 24, 26, 28, but it doesn't leave you, Jim. You know, when you're still playing, you look at every injury in increments of how many weeks I'm going to miss playing, right? Oh, torn ACL, I'm out for a year. Torn MCL, it's 4 weeks, whatever. You know, I'll be 40 next month, and I would tell him that, you know, when I go to a restaurant, I'm conscious of where I sit, where I stand, stuff like that, because of my back. And I had one back surgery, and that's at 39. I mean, I don't know how my back and right knee will feel when I'm 49, 59, 69. You really don't think about that stuff when you're in your 20s because you think you're invincible and you're young and you're a stud and everybody loves you. But, I mean, it affects you. It affects you in some way, shape, or form the rest of your life. And I don't think he's not married or any kids yet, but I just look at things so differently now that I do have daughters and wanting to be active with them. Let's put it this way, Jim, it would take a lot of money for somebody to have to convince me to go back out there and do more damage to my body and brain.
Ross Tucker joining me. I wish we had more time to talk about that. I want to ask you about this. I've got about 2 minutes, Ross. You and I talked on Radio Row in Atlanta. One of the things we talked about was my front page story. What kind of reaction did you get when you mentioned that on the air?
Okay, so I got to tell you this, dude. You're going to love this. So I mentioned myfrontpagestory.com as a great Valentine's Day gift when I came on with you at the Super Bowl. Well, a lot of people got the message, Jim, like a lot, because a lot of dudes ended up buying stories for their wives at myfrontpagestory.com. So many, in fact, that the two guys that run the company were a little overrun in terms of writing the story. So I invested in the business. I liked the business. So I said, you know what? I'll help out. I'll write some of the stories. So I talked to some of these guys, and it was hilarious, Jim. At least three or four of the guys I talked to said, I asked them, how'd you hear about it? Like, oh, well, there was some NFL guy was on with Jim Rome at the Super Bowl, and I heard him on Radio Row talking about this. I never told them it was me.
That's
great. I just got the details on their wife. I wrote the story. I sent it to them without ever telling them I was the NFL guy they heard on the Jim Rome show. I'm talking about myfrontpagestory.com.
Clones, it is Wednesday, but every day is a good day to get to O'Reilly Auto Parts. When it gets cold out there, your vehicle needs some extra attention. O'Reilly Auto Parts has everything you need to keep your vehicle toasty and warm. from choosing the right antifreeze for your engine to replacing your windshield wiper blades, O'Reilly will help you get your car or your truck in fighting shape for the cold weather ahead. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. February 12th was quite a day for Antonio Brown. That was yesterday. February 12th, he was found guilty of reckless driving after failing to show up for court. He was cited in November for allegedly driving triple digits through Ross Township, Pennsylvania. And then shortly after that news, he jumps on Twitter and says, quote, "Thank you, Steeler Nation, for a big 9 years. Time to move on and forward," with a peace out emoji and hashtag new demands. So that sounded like the tweet of a guy who had just been traded or released. But come to find out, neither of these things happened. He had not been traded. He had not been released. In fact, nothing happened. Nothing changed. He just wants out. So AB may have officially requested a trade yesterday, but he unofficially did it the minute he started to burn every single bridge in Pittsburgh. Remember, he was clowning his head coach on Instagram. He was ignoring phone calls from the owner. I don't want to get too technical here, but I'm pretty sure that when you're out there roasting the two most important guys on the org chart, the coach and the owner, you're probably sending a very specific message as to whether or not you want to be there. And whether or not that message was official or not, you were sending that message. So that continues a pretty horrendous offseason for his rep. You've got one ugly story after another, one reported legal issue after another, and we're still only in mid-February. Listen, plenty of blame to go around in Pittsburgh for this situation and how things got so bad, how they went so sideways. But lately, even with all that blame to go around, it seems like Antonio Brown is trying to hog it all for himself. That reckless driving charge, the weird tweet, they're not helping his rep. They're hurting it. Of course, the moment a tweet like that hits the internet, then everybody freaks out. You know, is he trying to run a misdirection? Is he trying to get people to look at him? People are reacting. You've got media outlets rushing to put together trades, photoshopping him into new jerseys. Is it the 49ers, the Jets, the Patriots, the Ravens? How about Cleveland Brown, Antonio Brown? You've got one Pro Bowler after another tweeting at him to join them. Yeah, maybe that's what he was looking to get out of yesterday. Maybe he needed a quick hit of that Twitter run, some Twitter love. Because aside from hurting Pittsburgh's leverage in a trade deal, exactly what did that tweet accomplish? What did he get out of that? What changed? Nothing changed from before that tweet to after that tweet. He's still under contract with the Steelers. The financials are still the financials. A trade still cannot be executed until March 13th. So exactly what was he looking for when he did that? What is the need that he was trying to meet? What was the point of that? Oh, and one more thing. Exactly why does Antonio Brown want to leave? There is that part of that. And don't get me wrong. I can see some of this. I can see how he might be tired of some of the guys in that locker room. That it's a room that's got a ton of egos and some guys who like to point fingers but never accept any blame themselves. No names mentioned. The freaking quarterback. I could see how it might piss Antonio Brown off that Ben Roethlisberger cracks him publicly. There's no need for that. Ben doesn't need to do that. I could see how Brown might feel like he gets more blame than he deserves, or how he just gets tired of being in that situation. But here's the thing. He might be tired of being in that situation, but to me, there isn't a better situation. It may not be perfect to him, but there is not a better situation. There's not another team that he could go to that would provide a better situation. Does the guy want to win a ring? The Steelers are in the hunt every single year. The only spot better for him than that would be New England. And there's no way Pittsburgh is going to let that happen. My man, Jason Lockenfora tweeted, "They want him, but can't have him. Steelers won't deal him to New England, Baltimore, Cleveland, or Cincinnati." kind of like how Belichick wouldn't deal Jimmy G to Cleveland. Why the hell would they? Why would the Steelers do that? The Steelers are going to do what's best for them and not what's best for Antonio Brown. Trading him to a team where he could come back and kill them twice a year is not in their best interest. Neither is trading him to the defending Super Bowl champs, the team they have to get through if they get what they want or to get what they want. So, what is this guy looking for? What does he want? Does he want a different offense? There's no other situation with a Hall of Fame quarterback throwing to him and a Pro Bowl wide receiver on the other side of him. I mean, where's he going to find that? Does he want more targets? How many more does he want? Does he want every single pass? I mean, he's making a lot of noise about San Francisco. But does he really think that Jimmy Garoppolo, coming off a shredded knee, is better than Big Ben? Does he really think that he wouldn't be double and triple teamed with the Niners? Again, what's he want? Does he want a situation where the team allows him to come and go as he pleases? To show up late for meetings? Is he looking for a situation where Antonio Brown can be Antonio Brown? Hell, he already has that in Pittsburgh. He can already come and go as he pleases in Pittsburgh. So let's recap really quickly. Ability to contend for a title every year. Check. Teammates, including a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Pro Bowl wide receiver. Check. Catching more than 100 passes every single year. Check. Flexibility to be himself and not show up to meetings on time. Or at all. Check. Ability to bail on staying in the dorms during training camp with everybody else and stay in a sweet Airbnb and be dropped off to practice in a Benz. Check. You know, essentially, do whatever the hell he wants because he works really hard and he puts up Hall of Fame numbers. Check. Bad situation. Bad situation sounds like the best situation ever. And Pittsburgh has all that, and nobody else does. But he doesn't want it. Hey, listen, one more thing about this, too. Then you've got the Steelers side of things, right? There are two sides here. Don't think for a second that you can just replace Antonio Brown. You can't. You cannot just replace a Hall of Fame receiver. I know Juju Smith-Schuster is a number one in waiting. I love the kid. But right now, you have two number ones. And while I'm no math wizard, two number ones is better than one number one. So all you fans who want to say that you're better off without this guy, don't. You're not. You're not better off without him, just like you're not better off without Le'Veon Bell. Yet here we are. Here the bleep we are. The Steelers are on the verge of not losing one of them, but losing both of them in the same offseason. So you can next man up all you want, but you don't next man up two of the league's top 10 players in their prime. So let me once again say what I said yesterday. The bridge may be obliterated. There may not be going any back. Or going back. Maybe they can't. Just don't tell me that the player is better off without the team and the team is better off without the player and they're better off without each other because they're not. They need each other. You watch. That divorce is not going to work out well for either side. Neither side is better for that. Unless there's something I'm missing, Pittsburgh is the best spot for him, and he's the best guy for them. So get into a room, swallow your pride, sort it out like the professionals you're all supposed to be, and get the hell on with it. Because blowing this thing up is all wrong, even if that's the way it's going to end up. 1-800, that is the definitive bottom line, right? What do you say to that? I had Juju on the show on Radio Row, and I asked him, has the bridge been obliterated, or is this something that you can still fix?
Can it still be salvaged? Can it be fixed?
It definitely can be fixed. I mean, it's something that is going to take time, the communication between our head coach to the team. It just takes time, you know. Obviously, the situation towards the end of the season where he didn't finish the season because he had an injury, which is totally – you know, understandable, but I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's staying, you know, black and gold, and he's going to finish out his career here.
How badly would you like to see him come back and be a Steeler next season?
Like, super bad. I mean, he makes the team better. You talk about the first time in franchise history, you have two receivers go for 100 catches plus over 1,000 yards each. Man, I mean, why not?
Exactly. That's my point. They may have a number one in waiting, but two number ones is better than one number one. So that was Juju on Radio Row leading up to the Super Bowl, but that was prior to Antonio Brown getting on Twitter yesterday and saying, thank you, Steeler Nation. So that thing's done. But he said it could be salvaged. It would just take time. Martin Truex Jr. is my guest. Martin, nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim, how's it going?
Good, bud. Great to have you back. Listen, whenever I have a boxer or an MMA fighter on the fight or the show during the week of a fight, I always check and see how's your week going, how you feeling. So let me ask you this. With the Daytona 500 coming up this weekend, are you fired up and itching to go right now, or do you have a sense of calm about you?
I'm pretty calm. I've been, I think this is my 15th or 16th Daytona 500, so got quite a bit of experience and feeling pretty comfortable, pretty calm, and at the same time fired up about the new season starting.
All right, so Martin, what about this? I mean, as a NASCAR champion and a two-time Xfinity Series champion, you've raced in the most pressure-packed situations that there is. What is it about Daytona that makes it so unique and so special?
Well, I think it's just the history here, you know. I mean, NASCAR was born in Daytona. This is where it all started. And, you know, to come down here and you know, the prestige of this race, the names who have won it, what it means to the sport, you know, got guys go throughout their career as known as a Daytona 500 champion. And that, you know, that's significant. And so it's a race I've been really close to winning. Finished second by, I don't know, a foot or less in 2016. And, you know, hopefully this year it'll be our turn to win it.
Well, man, that's an amazing sound I can hear in the background of some cars going around. That's awesome. You know, as I've talked to drivers over the years, they seem, Martin, like they're split on this. Are you able to approach the Daytona 500 like it's just another race? Or in the back of your mind, are you thinking it's the Daytona 500? It's not just another race.
I approach it that it's just not another race. And I feel like we come here and I don't. The only thing that matters here is winning. Second, I don't care to finish second. You know, of course, it's, you know, at other tracks, you might say, well, it was a good day. You know, we finished second, we got some points, move on to next week. Here, I feel like it's all about winning. Nothing else matters. And I completely separate this race from the rest of the season.
Martin Truex Jr. joining us. Daytona 500 is coming up this weekend. It is your first season with Joe Gibbs Racing. What has that transition been like?
Yeah, it's been really good so far. Feels comfortable. You know, I've known a lot of the people there. You know, our team the last couple of years has had a working relationship through Toyota with them, so I know a lot of the people and kind of how they do things. It's been an amazing experience to work with Coach and to see his excitement about the team and just his passion for racing and what he gives his teams to race with and how big of a part he is of it. He really, truly is the leader, and he's there every single day working on making his teams the best they can be. And, you know, to be part of that, it feels really good. It's been awesome so far, and hopefully I can deliver him some more race wins and hopefully some more championships.
You know, and you look at that team itself, right? With your arrival, the Joe Gibbs Racing team is absolutely loaded. You, Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, Eric Jones. I mean, what's the upside here? How good is this team?
I think it's great. I think it's, you know, I think we're going to be one of the teams to beat week in and week out. I feel like, you know, our driver lineup is strong. Crew chief lineup is strong. I think we have all the tools we need. And, you know, I've worked with Kyle and Denny and Eric the last, you know, few seasons as well and gotten to know them and, you know, through Toyota. And it's been a good relationship. I feel like we have a lot of respect for each other. We work well behind the scenes. And at the same time, we can race hard on the racetrack. And, you know, so that's a good mix. That's a good combination of things we need to have a strong team. And you know, hopefully we can go out there and all get results.
Martin Truex Jr. is joining us. Daytona coming up this weekend. Now, you, of course, won the title in 2017, and then you came as close as you possibly could to repeating. When you look back on last season and everything you had to deal with on top of the challenge of repeating, what kind of thoughts do you have about last season?
Well, it was a great season. There's no question. You know, we had some things get away from us here and there. I felt like we definitely, you know, should have won more races. We were in position to win a handful more, and things just didn't quite work out. But I was really proud of what we did, you know, with the news of our team going out of business and all those things looming. we were able to make a championship run. And, you know, we came up, I think, just 20 laps short at Homestead of winning that race and another and backing up that title. So I think to be able to put all that together and do that and not the perfect world of circumstances or scenarios says a lot about the character of our guys. And it was just it was a special team to be a part of. And it's something that you know, I'll certainly never forget.
You know, it's a really good point, right? If you don't know exactly what's going to happen or how it's going to play out or what's going to happen to the team, how are you able to get that mental focus and to make sure that you locked in and shut out everything else every single time you got into the car? How were you able to do that?
That's just what we had to do. You know, that's what we were faced with. And, you know, again, it's we had a great team, a lot of great people on it. And we all looked at each other when the news came out and said, hey, we're not going to let this change what we do and who we are. And we're going to go out there and do everything we can to try to back up this championship. So I wish we could have got it done. You know, it was kind of bittersweet ending to that era of racing with Furniture Row and all that meant to me. And, you know, team owner Barney Visser was an amazing guy, gave us a lot, and I wish we could have delivered, you know, but we didn't get it done. And this year we have another opportunity, hopefully, to get back in that position and do a little bit better.
You know, Martin, talking to you right now, I'm struck by something, and you've heard this before, but the suggestion that maybe that, if possible, you're actually maybe too nice a person and too clean of a driver. I know you've heard this before, but you've made the point also, look, we're going to race the right way. There's a right way, and we're going to race the right way. If you do that, is there any concern that guys will take advantage of that? And why is it important to you to race the right way and not take that win-at-all-cost mentality when you hit the track?
Well, I've thought about it a lot, and I think about it, you know, from time to time and, you know, throughout the years, and I've always felt like doing it the right way is my way, and it's the right way to do it. You know, certainly times are changing, things are changing. The way people are approaching these races change, and you know, I'm kind of getting sick and tired of you know, being on the bad end of these things. So I have thought about it, and I'll make adjustments when needed. But you know, I grew up watching my dad race and working on race cars and building my own cars, and I'll be honest with you, Jim, we didn't have a lot when I was racing as a kid, and you know, if I wrecked it, I had to fix it. And, you know, that's just the way it was. And I kind of, obviously, I don't do that anymore. I don't work on my own cars. I don't build them you know, like I used to. But it was just something that was instilled in me at an early age, was, you know, work hard and you know, respect the other competitors and take care of your equipment, because it costs money and you got to fix it. So maybe I need to look at being a little bit meaner on the racetrack, and certainly is something I've considered. And this season, with the rules changes and the cars being different and all that's going on with that, there's definitely going to be opportunities to do that, and we'll see how it plays out.
I get that. I appreciate that response. Martin, I wonder, the one thing about that, if you do it the way you've always done it and you've done it the right way, is there a feeling, though, that because I do it this way and I do it the right way, man, I've earned everything and every win I've ever had because I've done it the right way?
Well, there's no question. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know that, you know, if I just ran somebody over to win a race, I don't know that I would feel satisfied. I don't know if I would feel like I actually won. You know, I would feel like I cheated, you know. So that's just, you know, for me, I've never won a race by running into somebody my whole career, not even in a go-kart when I was a kid. So it's like, I don't know how I would feel, and I don't know if I'd be able to live with myself, to be honest with you.
I respect that a lot. Martin Truex Jr., my guest. All right, so last month you had the privilege of meeting the legendary Flyers mascot, Gritty. And that's something we'd all want. You actually did so. What was that moment like? Did it live up to the hype? Is it what you imagined it would be?
It surpassed the hype. It surpassed what I thought. It was amazing, a fun experience. He was really fun, and just crazy how funny he was, and how good of a time we had together. We took a few pictures. I was up in the grandstands with him. He gave me a jersey, which was really cool, Flyers jersey with my number on it. And then he had me do the Macarena with him, which was kind of embarrassing, but at the same time, kind of fun.
Got to do it. Good times. He is the driver of the number 19 car for Joe Gibbs Racing. You've got the Daytona 500. Of course, NASCAR kicks off its season on Sunday with its Super Bowl event. It is the 61st Daytona 500. It is 2:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Martin Truex Jr., our guest. Martin, so great to get caught up. I appreciate you and the conversation. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks, Jim. Always good to talk to you. Take care.
You too. All right, so quickly, Charlotte Hornets owner Michael Jordan met with the media yesterday. That's always fun. That's always interesting, because MJ does not do a lot of that. pretty low pro generally, but you've got the All-Star game coming up, and he sat down yesterday at the Hornets facility ahead of that All-Star game, and you knew there were going to be questions like this one, the one about James Harden and Russell Westbrook.
They all both hard, you know, and uniquely, it shows the talent, you know, that we have within the league. It shows still progression within the league. I'm very proud about what both guys have done because they're making their mark for the league, and I think it really helps the growth of the league, which is harder from a player standpoint.
All right, so the question being, what's more difficult? What's more challenging? Consecutive 30-point games or Russ's streak of triple-doubles? And MJ is very diplomatic, right? Very diplomatic and very respectful in saying that both are really hard. I mean, you knew that he'd like all of you to know that he himself could have done either of those things when he played if he wanted to. Hell, you know Mike. Mike would like you to know that he could probably do either of those things right now if he wanted to. However, that's not what he said. It's always cool to see the previous generation give love and respect to the current generation. I mean, it would be so easy for the older guys to turn that opportunity or that moment into an opportunity to say, get the hell off my lawn. You know, dudes complain that the NBA is so much easier now. It's not nearly as physical as it was back in the day. The guys like Harden and Russ could never do back then what they're doing right now. You know, the old guy to come out and say, they'd never get away with those shenanigans in the 90s. Let me play the entire answer so you understand exactly where this guy's coming from. And then we can just move along. This is what Mike had to say in totality about Russ and the beard and what they're doing right now.
They all both hard, you know, and uniquely, it shows the talent, you know, that we have within the league. It shows still progression within the league. I'm very proud about what both guys have done because they're making their mark for the league, and I think it really helps the growth of the league, which is harder from a player standpoint. Six championships, by all means.
Roasted! You had to know Mike was setting that up, right? If Mike's going on and on all respectfully about other people's accomplishments and what's getting done today, you knew he was setting that up. To the question of which is more difficult, 30 straight 30-point games or 10 straight triple-doubles, the answer apparently is six championships. Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks a lot, Mike. But that was not the question. Phil Jackson's Roman numeral hat thinks that Mike was insisting upon himself with that answer. And you can see how pleased he was with that answer. He reset the question just to set himself up for that answer. He gave a straight answer. There was a lot of words about the game and about the good players today, but really those words meant pretty much nothing because he didn't really mean anything he said. Meanwhile, he's talking and he's talking, and what he's doing is he's loading the cannon. And then he lights the fuse by asking himself a question.
Six championships, by all means.
Boom! And he gets the reaction that you knew he'd get from the fawning media. He absolutely slayed that crowd with that one. There was no way he was going to just sit up there and praise other guys. Not Mike. No chance at all. No way Mike was going to just sit there and respect the beard. And Russ. Now, I'm not saying that Mike was there to, quote, de-minimize what those guys have done. I'm not saying that he was going to de-minimize a couple of future Hall of Famers.
De-minimize.
Thanks, Alvy. But there was no way old Mike was going to sit there and hype those two. 45 ain't about that life. Never has been. Nice 30-game streak, James. Oh, by the way, nice beard, James. Let me know when you get to a six championship streak. Oh, hey, Russ, you like triple-doubles. You like triple-doubles, Russ? How about this triple-double? I won a title Then I doubled it. Then I tripled that. You know what that triple-double is? Russ, 6 championships. Only thing missing was Shaq. And if Shaq were there, Shaq would be like, tell Mike how Mike's ass tastes.
Tell me how my ass tastes.
Tell Mike how Mike's ass tastes. Then again, you knew that was coming. Of course he was going to do that. The answer for him is always 6 championships. Because he's Mike Jordan. He wouldn't be Mike Jordan if he didn't answer that question that way. And don't let that little chuckle fool you. He's not being clever. He's not being cute. He's not being funny. He hasn't mellowed. You see this guy when he went in the Hall of Fame? Did you hear that speech? He's not having a little fun. No, he said that and he meant it. He believed it. You want to ask him about what's more impressive or more difficult? He will remind you that neither one is more impressive or more difficult than winning 6 championships. And the thing about Mike, he's not wrong. Now, it's not the answer to the question that was asked, but it's not wrong. 6 championships is tougher than 30 straight games of 30 points per night. 6 championships obviously is tougher than 10 straight triple-doubles. Kind of reminds me of Jose Canseco when he went 40-40. He's like, if I'd known it was such a big deal, I would have done it every single year. And then there's Jose going off on that rant on Twitter, which I may get to later on. Anyway, neither here nor there. And that was not the answer to the question. Then again, for MJ, that's the answer to every question. Like, you could ask him any question, and the answer eventually will make it back to 6 championships.
6 championships.
Like, hey, Mike, how do you feel about Kemba Walker playing the All-Star game and playing in front of your fans in Charlotte? You know what? That's a great question. It's a great question. But you know what's better? 6 championships.
6 championships, by all means.
I got one for you, Mike. If a train leaves Detroit traveling at 60 miles per hour and another leaves Chicago traveling at 35 miles per hour, wait, I know this one. The answer is 6 championships.
6 championships, by all means.
All right. I get it, Mike. That's funny. We get it. You won 6 championships. Hey, let me ask you this, Mike. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
6 championships.
Yeah, that's kind of a tough question, right? If your definition of a sandwich involves something that is not bread being placed or stuffed in bread, that would mean that a hot dog could qualify. But at the same time, is a hot dog bun or roll, does that really count? You know, it's convoluted, it's confusing. If I had to guess, I'd say 6 championships.
6 championships.
Hey, Mike, is the ceiling the roof?
The ceiling is the roof.
Oh, no, I got that. 6 championships.
6 championships.
Again, he's right. It is harder. But again, nobody asked for that comparison. It's the right answer, but not the right question. But then he answers all questions with that answer. And you know what? If I had 6 rings, I would too. Hey, Rome, the Rolling Stones or the Who? Well, that's easy. 6 championships.
6 championships.
Hey, don't ever change, 45. Good thing we all know you won't.
I wish you guys nothing but best.
How did you not know that that's where he was going with that? Yeah, because Mike's just going to sit back and say, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man, the beard. Oh, yeah, that's so awesome what he's doing. Oh, Russ, one of my favorite players ever. When is it ever about anything other than Mike? John Cooper is their head coach. He joins us. John, really nice to have you on the show. How are you?
Great, thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you, John. So you're coming off a 6-3 win over Calgary last night where Nikita Kucherov had a goal and 3 assists. Let me start there. He's up to 88 points on the season. It leads the league. What is it about him and his game that makes him so special?
First of all, he's got elite talent, and he's, I don't know, I don't want to sound cliche-ish or anything like that, but he truly is a guy that sees it. Like, when he's going on a defender, he knows what the defender's going to do before the defender does. And then it translates into his offensive game as well, is he knows where to go and where the plays are going to develop, like 2 or 3 steps ahead. And so when he's doing that, you know, it's called hockey sense. I guess in the circles, and it's off the charts. And so It's like a student in class. There's A students, B students, C students, and unfortunately there's a couple Fs. He's an A-plus student.
John Cooper's joining us. Now, before the game, you talked about wanting to see if your guys could play a disciplined game against the Flames instead of that track meet-style game from the last meeting. What did you make of the way your guys showed up last night?
Well, if you saw the last game, it was one of those, if there was going to be 30 shots in the game, there's going to be 29 goals, and it was just one of those, no attention to detail on the defensive side. And one of the big things for us, we'd gone out west and we'd had a bunch of these kind of 6-5 games. And although entertaining for the fans, you know, on the coaching side of things and how to win in the spring when it really counts, you can't be in all those games all the time. And so big thing for us was, okay, we're going to play against a big offensive team that can score goals. How are we going to handle that? And, you know, a little disappointing. We gave up the third last night. On a power play rush, but overall we really limited them, and because of the way we played D, it really actually generated a lot of our offense for us, and you know, it turns into a 6-3 win.
Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper is my guest. You mentioned attention to detail. You know, one of the things that seems clear from watching you and the way you've kind of evolved since you got into the league is your attention to detail, how much preparation you put into everything that you do. So how much have you grown and evolved as a coach since when you first entered the NHL?
Oh, wow. A ton. And it's funny. You come into the NHL, you go, you know, I coached high school and junior and 3 years in the American League. And, you know, you're starting to see things again. And then you go in and you're like, okay, I'm ready. I know it all. And the longer I was in the NHL, I found out how actual little I knew. And it's been a constant evolution through the years of trying to get better, trying to challenge myself. I really didn't, you know, look for a lot of outside help when I was coming up. And now, you know, in the 6 years, I hired somebody from the Navy SEALs to come and work with us for the last 2 years so he could challenge myself, because, you know, in a lot of areas, you know, coaches coach the players, coaches coach the trainers and everybody, but in reality, who coaches the coach? And so to make myself better, I started to try and bring people in to help me and help guide, like, leadership and different areas of what I knew. And then the other big thing was, it is a head coach in the NHL, there's so much more than the X's and O's. It's probably, you know, the least amount of, you know, you coach the game, but you need to have, it's pivotal, you have unbelievable assistants. And I think, you know, this, especially this year with the guys we brought in, they've done so much for me. And, you know, I'm the one that, you know, was on the Jim Rome show and people are hearing my voice, but if it was not for my assistants, it wouldn't be this situation. That's how valuable they are. And for me, that's just been a huge learning curve to get, you know, to grow with good people helping you.
John Cooper joining us. John, this is why I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. There's a lot to unpack there, a lot of good stuff in there. I love that notion that, yeah, well, who's going to coach the coach? The coach is always bringing people to talk to the players, but who's the one who coaches the coach? There's a fascination. I've got the same thing, John. There's a fascination, I think, with a lot of us about Navy SEALs. And I've known SEALs. I've tried to connect with SEALs. I don't know if you want to protect the confidentiality of that SEAL, but, like, who is that that you deal with? And even if there's not a name, what do you get from that?
Well, believe it or not, what they do is very similar to what we do. It's just the stakes are way higher. And when the other bonus is, when you get to watch a war movie, you get to find out actually how much of it's true. But in all seriousness,
right,
it's all about team. And like how they, you know, they have an ethos and that's well known. You can go on the internet and read that. But how it went from, because in the 90s, or maybe I'm getting the dates wrong, but the Navy SEALs weren't as respected as they are now. And they changed their whole culture. And those guys there, we went out to Coronado last year. We brought our team out there. They were phenomenal. I can't say enough about the discipline, the way these guys train, but how they all do it together. And that's what you have to do as a team. Like, when you've got somebody going off the rails a little bit, whatever it is, like, if you don't reel him in, like, you have to move on from him. And sometimes that may be the best player you have. And it's the same in the SEALs. It's all about teamwork and it's all about working together. And they're some of the parts instead of, you know, just somebody being single out there. And that's how I truly believe teams are made. And, you know, in hockey and other sports, it's all about role. And you need to have somebody, yes, you need to have a Kucherov that's going to get you the points. You need to have a Stamkos and a Braden Point. But you need to have, like, the Ryan Callahans of the world, the guys that understand they're going to play 10 minutes, but they're going to give you everything they have. And they understand they're going to sit on the bench, be called on 3 or 4 times in a game. But when they are going to deliver for you. And it's very much of that Navy SEAL attitude, and that's why I respect those guys so much.
We're talking to John Cooper. It's so well said. I mean, it's very clear how you are where you are right now, but not as clear if you don't know the background, John. Now, you grew up in Prince George, British Columbia. You played prep school hockey in Saskatchewan. So how in the world did you get from playing hockey in Western Canada to playing college lacrosse in New York?
Well, it's kind of it's a very complimentary sport. So in Canada, you play box lacrosse, so very similar to hockey rink, 5 guys on the side, and it was really, really big, and that would be the sport I'd play in the spring, play hockey in the winter. And I really went to Notre Dame and Wilcox, Saskatchewan, to go and fulfill my dreams as a hockey player. You leave your town, you're like, you know, the good player in your town, and then when I went there, I found out, oh, wow, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was. First time I'd ever been cut from a team when I went there, so it was a big growing experience for me. But I happened to be a pretty good lacrosse player as well, and when I couldn't sustain or get a scholarship for hockey, I turned to lacrosse, and doors opened for me there, and I had a wonderful career at Hofstra when I was there, and it was such a great experience playing college sports. And you know, it wasn't hockey, but lacrosse was awesome for me. But hockey was always my true love, and I was always in the background going to go back to it. And I thought when I went to law school, I was going to be an agent. And I dipped my toes in the water a little bit, but I just didn't really like it. And then, you know, if you've read before, I met a judge, and I was trying to get a job in Michigan. And basically, he hired me to be a defender in his court if I coach his kid's high school team. And that's how it all started.
That's incredible. That's the abridged version. That's an amazing thing. You kind of glossed over that. You went to law school in Michigan and you approached a judge about becoming a public defender. And the judge made you a deal that if you coached his son's hockey team in high school, you could become a public defender. So then you're practicing law and you're coaching hockey. You get an opportunity in the NAHL in Texas, which meant you had to make a decision. You keep working your way up. You get to the AHL, and then you get the call from Steve Yzerman, who offered you the head coaching job at Tampa Bay. What do you remember about that call?
Well, it was, I'll tell you, so the initial call I got from Julian Brisebois, who coincidentally is my general manager now, took over for Steve. They asked me to come interview, and I'm like, holy, this is craziness. So I'd been in Green Bay, and I loved it there, and you know, coaching, like, 100 yards from Lambeau Field. It was awesome. Anyway, I go on the interview because somebody told me, hey, don't burn any bridges. Make sure you go on this. It's good to meet people. So they fly me down there, and I do remember sitting outside Eisenman's office, and there's the little sign that says Steve Yzerman. It's kind of a little nervous inside. And then he lets me in, and there he's standing up, and he's like, hey, John, nice pleasure to meet you. My name's Steve Yzerman, and that was my OS moment where I was like, yeah, no, I understand who you are. And he was, but he was the most humble, nicest guy ever. Like, you know, you're intimidated going in there. And then it just turns out he's like, you know what? He puts his pants on the same way I do. He's just a regular guy that is, just happens to be one of the best hockey players to ever play. But what was money about him was his mind. Like he thinks it through, and he was as good a hockey player as he was on the ice. He's just like that off the ice. And it's no coincidence he's been an unreal general manager.
I mean, John, one of the best players ever, and certainly I know you'd agree with this, one of the greatest leaders in any sport, Stevie Yzerman. I got to ask then, John, what's it like to know that you are the longest tenured head coach in the NHL? I mean, this whole journey is so amazing, from Prince George to Hofstra to practicing law to coaching high school hockey to being where you are right now, the longest tenured coach in the NHL. Does it feel absolutely crazy, or does it feel kind of real and normal to you?
I did probably the former, a little bit more crazy because, you know, it was this league. It's so hard to get into this league, let alone to stay in it. And you have to have so many things go your way. You need so many people to help you out. And that's exactly what happened to me. And it was, it's funny, when I was in the American Hockey League, and we had a wonderful run in 2012, and we ended up winning the Calder Cup. So at the time, you know, my name was, quote-unquote, it was kind of hot at the time. And so for me, somebody who didn't play in the NHL, I'm sitting there thinking, wow, this is my crack. Like, you don't know how many chances you're going to get in the league. So we'd won the call the cup, and I'd interviewed with Washington and Edmonton. And I went to multiple interviews, somewhat confident I might get one of those jobs. But deep down inside, I knew I wasn't ready. But you got it. When the door opens, you got to walk through it. And I didn't get either one of those jobs. And it turned out the next year I went back and worked for Tampa again and the American League. And by the end of the year, that's when I got the call to come to the NHL. And I truly believe if I'd gone to one of those other two places, I may not be in the league still today. I can't say that for sure. But I do know that the fact that I got to stay with Tampa, grow up in the organization with the players I was had, and to have Steve and Julian as my general managers really made it comforting for me and their belief in me growing up, and I think that's why I'm still here today.
It is an amazing story with an amazing background, John. Like I mentioned, I've been wanting to have this conversation for a long time. I really appreciate you finding time for it, and we had this conversation finally. Really good to have you on the show, John. Thanks so much. Tell me we can do it again soon.
You must be popular because I got a bunch of text messages from all over the country saying, you're going to Jim Rome show? This is unbelievable. So you're obviously reaching a lot of people.
My man, for you and me both, that's great. That's great. I was getting a lot of texts also from people saying, you got John Cooper on? I do. Let's go to Denver, right? Dan in Denver, a legitimate Bronco fan. What's going on, Dan? How do you like this move?
Oh, I'm a big move for the Broncos acquiring Joe Flacco. He's definitely the missing piece. The missing piece to take them from 5-11 to 8-8. This transaction puts Denver a quarterback away from being good again. And great decision putting the quarterback who consistently overthrows his wide receivers in altitude. Instead of overthrowing his guys on go routes by 5 yards, it'll be 10 now. Seriously, Rome, I'm so mad. I might buy a Joe Flacco jersey just to burn it on Twitter like those idiotic Steelers fans did yesterday. The only person who thinks acquiring Joe Flacco is a good move is Joe Flacco. In real forward thinking from Elway, in a league all about high-powered offenses and young, mobile quarterbacks, he hires an old, defensive-minded head coach and pairs him with a tall, immobile quarterback. I mean, what's Elway going to do next? A down lineman at corner? I'm at the point now, Rome, where I'd rather see an open quarterback competition between 65-year-old Elway and 45-year-old Mallard this summer before I see Flacco put on an orange and blue number 5, wore Flacco grooming the quarterback of the future and Elway's mane out.
Dan in Denver. Dan, that might have been your best call ever. Like, on topic, no less. And as Hawk likes to talk about in market, on topic. Let's go to the Bronx. Raw in the Bronx. Raw, brother, what's up?
Yo, what's up, Rome? You know, I'm calling in trying to win the golden ticket. And I'm thinking about when you were talking about, you know, the Kareem Hunt domestic situation. Being a big boxing fan and a hip-hop recording artist, I decided to express my feelings toward a D-bag named Floyd Mayweather. So I decided to spit this 16 for you. And hopefully it'll get me in to smack off 2019. It's like, yo, the count of his slob who puts his hands on broads can't be in public without a bodyguard. Both 50 was frauds. Your wins and the one that was part of your squad. Jose Castillo got robbed. You leapfrogged the dogs. Never fought against odds. Stole a fat rod. Roger Mayweather, better legacy. Hard work and dedication, not your pedigree. You're the reason boxing was disintegrating. A sport rehabilitating from pay-per-view raping. Fought a UFC fighter with no hesitation. Top welterweights of this new generation still waiting for you to come out of retirement. Stick to girl collection, a safer environment. YouTube Raw Deluxe. Peace, Raw.
Raw in the Bronx. Did you just spit pay-per-view raping? Floyd Mayweather be pay-per-view raping? Yeah, I've heard worse on this show. I've heard much worse on this show. All right, let's keep this thing going. We go this time to Massachusetts. Roger in Mass. Roger, what's up? How are you?
Long-time listener.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, listen, I honestly think that he should just retire. After all the years he had, the potential he had with the incredible defenses that defended that team, and I don't want to de-minimize someone's injuries, but it just seemed like whenever it wasn't convenient for him, he always seemed to get hurt. He always claimed he played through injuries. I didn't see it. I'm not a huge Baltimore fan, being from Massachusetts, obviously. But I am a huge football fan, and I am actually a Denver Broncos fan, and I can understand your last caller and his anxiety towards bringing in Flacco. There was a lot more. I'll be honest with you, Jim. I had rather see Kaepernick go there because at least he's not falling apart. He still has the potential of being great. We might not like him because of his attitude, but he's still a fantastic football player.
Roger, my man, you know, you are a fantastic caller. I love that. I love that for so many reasons. Rack him. Man, I'm this close to giving him a golden ticket for two reasons. For two reasons. His energy, his enthusiasm.
Good night,